That'd be Israeli.
Okay, and you got to turn on the mic. Okay. Very fascinating material. Wow. It's on. It takes like a half minute for it to go on. I don't know why, but that's the way it works. Okay. Okay. Today is Yom HaZikaron. It's May 9th, 2011. And I just want to say a few words about another halal. As I said yesterday, if we speak in terms of 23,000 halalim lo aleinu, it doesn't have the same impact about talking about one. So yesterday I spoke about a victim of Arab terror, Dr. David Applebaum, his daughter Nava Hashem Yikom Damo. Today I want to mention when BMT was in its infancy, so we had a very successful madrichia, Saril Birnbaum. What made him so successful was that his parents had been shlichim. I don't think they're alive anymore. His parents had been shlichim for the Torah Culture Department in, I believe it was Toronto, if I'm not mistaken. I know it was in Canada. And he spent some formative years in an Anglo environment, so he not only knew English well, he knew the mentality. In addition, he was one of the top Talmidim in the Gush. And these were the early years. He was a wonderful, wonderful Madriche Saril. And he started going with a girl, and they spoke in terms of getting engaged. And the Yom Kippur War broke out. And from Rehov Ababonel 24, that Yom Kippur Shabbos, Yom Kippur fell on Shabbat, if you recall. And from Ababonel 24, he got the instructions where to go. It was a terrible, terrible day. Someone ran in to BMT. We had just finished Musaf, and some English fellow, I don't know who it was, who lived in the neighborhood, ran in hysterical, war is broken out. And a few minutes later, sound trucks went up and down the streets telling everyone to turn their radios on. And on the radio, we turned the radio on. I remember it like yesterday. I'm going to be in that very building right after class to visit my mother. It's a senior citizens today, assisted living. And we turned the radio on, and they were announcing all the code numbers for the different units, which I was not yet in the Army, but later when I went into the Army, I understood what that meant. And then they were telling you where to report, and Surreal left that afternoon. There were all types of shilas. Do you take your tefillin with you? Just think for a minute, shilas you never dreamt about. And a lot has been written on these shilas. Today already it's halacha psuka. But at that time, 73, these questions were in their infancy. And he never returned. He was killed the next day in the Golan Heights in those tremendous tank battles where so few stood off so many. Until today, we don't know how Syria wasn't down in Tiberias and Tzfat, because basically there was very little between them and getting to Tiberias and Tzfat. And Saril fell. What hurt even more was that the Saturday night before, I was much younger and I used to walk into town to meet the fellas and just to see what's going on. And I met Saril with his girlfriend, if I'm not mistaken, at Richie's Pizzas. Richie's Pizza today, my grandchildren believe that pizza is indigenous to the state of Israel. They don't know that Richie's was Americans, were the first pizza parlor to open here on Rehov King George, and it was a shame dover. I'll meet you at Richie's. And that's in that neighborhood or around Richie's is where I met Saril and his girlfriend, and it breaks the heart. So many years later, you keep on thinking he would have been a grandfather today, and he was bright, and what he would have achieved in life. For many years, when BMT was here, there was a library. This part of the building was totally changed. It's where the Abraham program is. There was a library, and Saril's picture hung there. But this is the sad part of life. Time marches on, and we all enter the dustbin of history. And as the Rav said, a person, he spoke about Megillat Esther, and he said a person has to know when his role is over and how to get off the stage and go back to eternity. And he spoke in terms of Esther and Mordechai. What happened to them? We don't know. Who recorded what happened? They played their role and they knew how to step off the stage. And if you want a contemporary example, I give this in my new book. I actually give this Divrei Torah, quoting the Rav, I believe. And if you want a contemporary example, the greatest example of all is Avital Sharansky. How that lady fought like a lion, went all over the world, brought Margaret Thatcher to tears. And the minute Anatoly got out, she totally disappeared from the central stage, like Esther Hamalka. She told me she learned English just to help get Natan out of jail and go all over. And the minute he got out, she said, she totally forgot her English. And I mean, that's an amazing statement. So I want to recall Sariah Birnbaum's memory, and this is Yom HaZikaron. He paid such a heavy price. We have self-hating Jews. It hurts so much. J Street met with the PLO yesterday after they combined with Hamas. Just self-hating, ignorant Jews. They don't know what's going on here. I admire, David Gordis. In one of his articles, he wrote, I too was a liberal till I came in Aliyah and rockets were shot at my children. At that point, my eyes opened. I'm paraphrasing him. And I wish all these J Street people and all these liberals should come and live here and understand what the situation is. Now, that's number one in today, Yom HaZikaron. Number two, something amazing. Remember, I gave a shiur in the Satmar Rav. And I mentioned that it's not hard to understand why he's so anti-Zionist. All of you know that he was saved by the Jewish Agency, and I explained psychologically when someone... Gil, you want to just sit here? It's going to be a small class today. When someone does you a tremendous favor, and you... In life, we repay favors. But someone does you a favor, saves his life, your life, there's no way to repay him. So psychologically, either you hate him or you love him. You love him for obvious reasons, or you hate him because subconsciously you resent the fact he did you a favor that you can never repay. So a Talmud listening to the Shia, L'chvod Mori Rebbe of Aaron Shlita, Stephen Wagner, sent me the following story. He tells the following story that he brought a proof to what I said, that he heard the story about the Chatam Sofer, that there was a Jew on the death row, and the Chatam Sofer, being close to so many powerful Hungarian politicians, was asked to intervene. He did so, and he saved the man's life. After the man was released from jail, the man came to the Chatam Sofer, but the Chatam Sofer told his shamus he refuses to see him. A day later, the Chatam Sofer gave his shamus an envelope with five little pebbles in the envelope. And he said, I want you to bring it to this man. All right, the shamus of the Chatam Sofer goes to the man, brings in an envelope with five pebbles, the man is going berserk. The Chatam Sofer won't speak to him, sends him five pebbles. What's going on? So he goes to see the Chatam Sofer. This time, the Chatam Sofer lets him in. And he says, Rebbe, I came to thank you. You saved my life. And here, I don't understand. You're witnessing me. You sent me an envelope with five pebbles. So the Chatam Sofer says, look, I did you a favor that you can never repay me. I saved your life. I'm worried that because you can't possibly repay me, you're going to hate me. And if you hate me, you're going to throw rocks at me. So I wanted to give you small pebbles when you throw the rocks. These are the rocks you should throw at me. So I want to thank Stephen Wagner. I don't know if the story is true or not, as we spoke about yesterday, but this is what Klal Yisrael believed about Gedolei Yisrael. So thank you. Finally, I want to say to Yitzchak, I was very moved by what you said yesterday. I went out of my way to look for variant readings. This is the Dikduke Sofrim. There is no variant reading on that Gemara. So you owe your mother an apology. In other words, you saved wine from the Havdalah in the cup to the Kiddush. Beautiful.
That's what the Rav said.
You see, everyone listening should see what a Talmud Neman L'Rabbo is. Beautiful, beautiful. Nevertheless, there's no variant reading, and we stand on what we said yesterday. And in all my years of teaching, I never had something like yesterday. That's all I can tell you. You don't realize the impact, because I was preaching the two sermons, never dreaming that you were there and heard this Divrei Torah from the Rav, but that you should take it at face value. But it shows you never checked the Gemara out. But I'm sure, the Rav didn't give you a daf. In other words, the Rav used to call.
He did.
Oh, he did. Kuf Yud Gimel.
Chevre Shas.
Chevre Shas. Right.
And he gave an hour of the Pasha.
Right.
I remember in a Vedic and Oyster Vedic, all his Pashas.
Fabulous.
The Gemara was the whole of his heart. I said, listen.
Now, I'm curious. This is unbelievable, because if he gave you the daf, didn't anyone see it was backwards? Is there anyone you know that was there at that time who's a Talmud Chacham? If you can, talk with him and let me know. Okay. Now, we're going to come back. We're going to come back to Michael in a few minutes. You won't believe what happened to me this week, but we'll get there. Let me put it into context. Last week we devoted, we're going to finish up today. It's so important, the sources, what I'm quoting today, from the Eim HaBanim Smeicha. And you see, it's a Hasidic book. This is a Munkacha. He can't shake the Hasidus out of him. He's a Munkacha, and he can't shake the Hasidus out of him. And he would like to believe the Rebbe would go along with him. And he develops this theme, how we sinned, and why it had to be people who were not Shomer Shabbos, and had Gedolei Yisrael built the country, the Sitra Achia would have gotten after them, and he wouldn't have allowed it, the Masfuta, you know, the bad side of God, and this is why it had to be, Korash had to build, and not good Jews, and Meredik Vetlach, and we can't even understand it, because this is Kabbalah. But what appreciation for the Jews that Amachalul Shabbos, nevertheless they live in Israel, and Tovla Mutbiara Tseinu, we quote Trumpledore. Could you imagine a Munkacha Chassid quoting Trumpledore, and he's Melamed Skut and Koladar Beretz Yisrael, and this volume, Eim HaBanim Smeicha, anyone growing up in Israel, with all due respects to Mori Rebbe, and I don't have to apologize, you all know that I live and breathe the air of Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. Nevertheless, as powerful as Koldo Dido Fake is, the average kid in Israel, the average kid in a yeshiva tichonit, in a religious high school, in Kibbutz Adati, it's a little too deep for him. Yehud and Goral, you know, if you're familiar with it, you know, it's a little bit too deep for him. Eim HaBanim Smeicha captured the Israeli scene. In the circles in which I live, no volume is so widely revered, studied. We already have an Israeli edition. We have an edition with footnotes. We have two English translations. The Eim HaBanim Smeicha. So, of course, Michael said, what am I so excited about? Where are the other millions of Hasidim who remained behind, who didn't go in Aliyah? We know if you read the literature today, the memoir literature, everybody tells the same story, how they asked the Rebbe, should they go? The Rebbe said not to go, and the wind-up was the entire family was wiped out, except for the child or two, who was a B'nai Akivinik or a Shoma Hatzayinik, whatever they were, and they went in Aliyah, and because of that, they're alive. And Michael asked, why didn't the masses, what am I praising him? Abanu Smecha, where are the other hundreds of thousands of Chassidim who stayed behind? And I tried to answer Michael and make clear to him, you're looking at it the wrong way. What's amazing is that a Munkacsa Chassid raised, nurtured in Hungary, and yet Rav Tachtel had the ability to shift gears. This is amazing. And you have to understand, people don't change. You come from the conservative movement, you come from the Rama element, you come to Torah, but you were never in the Hasidic world. You have to understand what it means to be a Hasid. Hasidim, they give up their minds. I was shocked in the early 70s, I'm riding a bus, Tisha B'Av, coming back from the Kotel, and I'm sitting next to some Gerich Hasidim. And we struck up a conversation in Yiddish. And when I asked them, it was evidently right before elections, you can even check, it's elections before Milchemet Yom Kippurim, so whatever year you can check. And I asked him, who will he vote for? And he says to me, he'll vote whatever the Rebbe tells him. And I look at him, a man in his 40s, whoever the Rebbe tells you, what, you don't have a mind of your own? And this is the way they're programmed. And this is Das Torah today. You see what's happened in the Litvish Welt. We've lost all individuality. Everyone is aping and mocking and mimicking the Hasidic world. All right, this is a wonderful question. How much freedom of choice? How do we educate? Obviously, I come from the Rav, and I was taught total freedom of choice. This is divine dignity. We educate, and we hope our students, our followers, our children will be makayim uvachata b'chayim. Hine anochi lateng lefneichem et achayim v'yetam mavet, etc. Et abrocha v'yetam klala uvachata b'chayim lamantechiu. But this is their thinking. And they don't change until today. How many Satma have become religious Zionists? Think for a minute. Yeah, there are a few. But they're batel b'shishim. You see, Satma, people told me yesterday that on some website, people are citing me now as an example of a good Jew. Why can't you be like a Rav Rekefet and recognize that Satma's correct? All from that shiur I gave on Vayol Moshe and the article in their newspaper, Vayu Professor. Oh my gosh, it's a, you understand? These people, they don't think. This is, and you have to understand that the majority, the overall majority, it's not a question why they don't change. You have to dance for joy that Rav Teichtel not only changed, but wrote such a meritic sefer that you might think it comes from the Beis Medrash of Rav Avram Yitzchak Kohen Cook. I don't know if the Rav could have written such a revolutionary sefer that if you're Mechal Shabbos in Israel, you still have tremendous zchuyot, and all that he wrote, unbelievable. I'm not certain the Rav would agree. And you've got to give all the credit. Now, what happened to me, and here's what I want to add, you won't believe this, in the hotel, Baruch Hashem, there were quite a number of people who evidently went on to that hotel, because I don't have to tell you, for Pesach, it's a new minhag today. Jews don't want to stay home, don't want to have to work. My wife and I felt very guilty. I have to tell you, being in Israel and knowing we didn't have a house that was 100% kosher for Pesach bothered us. Al-Hapi-Alacha, there's nothing to bother you. You're not coming home. You sold the chametz. You cleaned. There's no chametz ban, etc., etc. But nevertheless, when we were in America, you're in a different country. Then I had a different problem. How to sell chametz, the time difference, etc., etc. You have to do a double sale, a sale for your chametz here and a sale for your chametz there. Seder. Okay. So there were a number of people who came to the program because I was teaching. In other words, these are people who are listening to the shurim and wanted to meet me. Among them was a middle-aged man who made Aliyah a number of years ago. He still has a business in America. He goes back, and he was there. His father was a survivor. It was a very inspiring family where you saw three, four generations. I think it was four generations there, and spitting in Hitler's face. The father and mother survived by miracles. That's the grandparents or the great-grandparents or his parents. And they were zeicher to Dorot Shleimim Oskim B'Torah of a Mitzvah. Fine. So this guy is hysterical why the Jews remain in America. how can a frug Jew remain in America? He was hysterical. So much so that he showed me an article in English that he wrote about coming in Aliyah, how you must come, how you must do, how you have no excuse to stay behind. So in one of my shayurim, I related to him, you know, in a nice way, and I told the people a story that when you come in Aliyah, you go through the shock, the trauma of you feel you've become a total Jew, a complete Jew, and you can't understand your friends in America. And I told them stories when I went back the first time. I wanted to shoot everyone I saw. And I was angry at Rabbanim, Rashi Yeshiva, colleagues, Talmidei Chachamim. How can you stay in Queens? How can you stay in Brooklyn? Eretz Yisrael has one crying need. More Jews. That's our crying need. So I said, I learned over the course of time, if you yell, you shout, you scream, no one, they laugh at you. They're not ready to listen. They can't listen. They're so involved. They're so ingrained in Western culture. They're making a living. They have panasa. They're not listening. So I said, I always give advice to people who come in Aliyah when they go back for the first time, bite your lips. You're not going to get anywhere with vinegar. It's hard. I know. I learned how to give a little honey and the sugar coat the vinegar. But you got to learn how to do it. And he was laughing because he knew I had just seen what he wrote in English, which was fabulous but caustic. Don't you think I'm walking along Rehov Palmach, coming back from Mincha. This person lives in Beit Shemesh. I'm walking back from Mincha. And I hear someone calling, Rav Rakefet, Rav Rakefet. I turn around, I don't see it. I didn't see this guy jumping out of the car. I didn't recognize him because it's out of context. And let me show you what I did. And he comes running over to me and he says he had it translated into Hebrew, fabulous Hebrew, done, you know, by an Israeli who knows English. And he said, we chose 50 names of the 50 biggest gedolim, Rashi, Yeshiva, Rebbeim in the Haredi world, and we sent this out to every last one. And you want me to give you the introduction? I'll give you the introduction. Tells the following story. This story, Yitzchak Fram made famous. That's his first name, right? Just Rabbi Fram from Baltimore, the Mashkiach, the Rebbe there, very good speaker. So he made the story famous. Again, I don't know if it's true or not, that there was this individual who constantly blasted Reb Moshe, constantly made fun of his psukim, constantly found fault with him. So one time, Reb Tuvia Goldstein, do you remember who that was? Emek Halacha, he was one of Reb Moshe's top talmidim, Zeicher Tzadik Livracha, Reb Tuvia Goldstein. So Reb Tuvia Goldstein is entering Reb Moshe's apartment on the Lower East Side, FDR Drive, and this Jew who constantly ripped the hell out of Reb Moshe is walking out. So he walks in and he says, says to Reb Moshe, certainly this Jew was here to apologize to you. Reb Moshe says, no, he didn't apologize. But Rebbe, he rips you apart. He machs for my ashem blatter. It's a Yiddish expression that I don't know how to say it in English. Makes out of you ashem blatter. Ashes and dirt. So Reb Moshe says, yeah. He didn't apologize, no. So why did he come to see you? He just lost his job in the rabbinate. He needed a new rabbinate. So he asked me for a letter of recommendation. So Reb Tuvia Goldstein says to Reb Moshe, and you wrote him the letter? He says, yes, I wrote him a beautiful letter. He says to Reb Moshe, but this man, what he does? He says, Reb Moshe says, look, everyone in life needs one great act that he does before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe this was my Sha'a Echad, the great moment of my life. You know how he begins the essay? This is your Sha'a Echad. Ha'im zuhi ha-sha'at shalcha, pleading with these great leaders of the Haredi world, b'chozeh b'tshuva, celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut, say the tefillah l'man habedina. I guess he's quoting me here. I'm the one who says, if you don't want to say, she'i reshit smicha kodesh, say, shetehei reshit. big deal. You understand? Say hallel, widow without a bracha. He's quoting me. I tell everyone, you have to say hallel. Widow without a bracha is a small question. But hallel has to be said. The Svadim always say without a bracha, outside of a few days a year. All right, so machlekes and taisvus. There is no formal chief rabbinate with a formal takana in the sense of a Sanhedrin. Fine. But hallel? Say, pray for Tzva Haganali Yisrael, not to pray for the soldiers. Rebbeinu Shalom, Panovich only has his doors open. Bavav can, Vishnitz can only have his doors open. Bells can only have his doors open. Ger can only have his doors open because hundreds of thousands of soldiers are out there protecting us. Common sense? Halachic sense? Fabulous. Michael, if one Gadol b'Yisrael gets up and says, Aviti Peshati Chatati, I see the light, I will be shocked. Let's hope out of the 50 letters, he affects one. Okay? But when I look at this, I see another signature, Michael Miller, signed on. I don't see Aaron Rakefet. Not that he doesn't agree. Aaron Rakefet agrees 1,000,000%. But unfortunately, I know what we're up against. Okay. I'll give you a copy and we'll make sure. The English one, I don't know what I did with it. I don't know what I did. Could be I gave it back to them. I don't remember. Anyway, let me continue here. What I'm about to say, it's unbelievable that a Munkacha can say this. And I challenge you, anyone here going back to New York, I challenge you to get up in YU and say these words. They will laugh you out and call you a fanatic and call you a blind follower of Aaron Rakefet. You see, we have lost in the Golah our entire sense of nationhood. Are you an American or are you a Jew? And ask that question. Ask a Russian Jew. Ask an English Jew. Ask a Canadian Jew. Ask an American Jew. What's the word you hear all over Malchut Shel Chesed? Everyone praising America, praising England. And we've totally lost the sense of Jewish identity, that we're different, that we're a nation, that we're a people. And you know how many times I've said this, and believe me, it's the Rav's Torah. It's not my own, but it's axiomatic. It's so basic. The Jewish religion does not exist. There's no such thing as a Jewish religion. This is why the world can't understand us. This is why there's such hatred. This is why there's so much anti-Semitism. Don't we have time and again in the big world, you have religion. It's individualistic. Take an example of modern times, 1990s. England fought a war in Falkland with Argentina. Who was killing who? Christian versus Christian. You speak about Alsace-Lorraine. How many times did France and Germany go to war over Alsace-Lorraine? Christian killing Christian. Right or wrong? And take a look at the Muslim world today. Who's blowing up who? How many Muslims have killed? How many Muslims in Iraq? In Iran? In Afghanistan? In Palestine, what they call? In Hamas land, in Gaza? Jew versus Jew goes against the very concept of being a Jew. It's much more than a religion. It's a religion, it's a peoplehood, it's a nationhood. It's an interlocking identity. And I don't want to give any more Divrei Torah. The Divrei Torah is endless on this topic. And this feeling you lose in the Golah, it's totally gone. And here you have a printed source for what went on in Germany. He is unbelievable here. He makes the point that before the Enlightenment, in Germany, they accepted Palish Rabbanim. There was never a concept of an outsider. You were a Jew. By the time of the Enlightenment, and with all that Rav Hirsch did, and with all that Rav Hildesheimer did, the German Jew looked down upon the East European Jew. And he proves it. He quotes the German expression. No, give me the expression. You're an Ausjud. Ausjuden. Outsiders. In the big, beautiful German congregations, East Europeans felt very uncomfortable davening there. All over Berlin, all over Frankfurt, wherever you had East Europeans who were living in Germany, for whatever the reason was that they lived in Germany, emigrated to Germany, they had to build their own shtiblach, they had to build their own shuls. They were looked down upon. They did not feel that connection. Imagine calling them Aus Yidden, as if to say, you are not as good as us. And you want to know something? On this point, he absolutely says what I quote in my second volume of the Rav, where Moriu Rebbe exactly expresses the same idea. Remember what I've quoted so many times? Where the Rav says, Chavali didn't mention the name, but you know, you don't want to mention names at times. The Rav says when he was in Berlin, he had this conversation with a very prominent Orthodox rabbi. A man who represented Torim Derech Eretz. And this rabbi told him, and the Rav quoted him in German, you should know. The Rav quoted his German, that with the Polish Jews, he has nothing in common. He said, maybe with Rav Chaim Moisa, I have something in common, that he's a great Talmud Chacham, and when I have a Shaila, maybe, I would turn to Rav Chaim Moisa Gizhinsky. But outside of Rav Chaim Moisa, what do I have in common with the masses, with the Hasidic masses? Ignorant people, primitive people. They lack savoir-faire, they lack sophistication, they lack culture. We are Germans. We are cultured. And you all know that Rav Hirsch, on the 100th anniversary of the birth of Schiller, Rav Hirsch gave an unbelievable talk that was widely publicized in Germany. He was a total German citizen. Now, I'm positive Rav Hirsch perhaps was able to balance it out. But the masses, by and large, were not. And the most pious Germans, among them Jews who were medaktik in mitzvos, kalaka chamura. But if you ask them what their nationality was, it was German. And this is a golden point. And this is the touchstone. When you talk of Aliyah, it's not a question of frumkeit. You can be frum in America, you can be frum here. You can be a lamdan in America, you can be a lamdan here. You can have proper values in America, you can have proper values here. That's not the heart of the question. The heart of the question is your basic identity. And this is the touchstone of Israel, the touchstone of Aliyah, the touchstone of the miracle of modern-day Israel, that Jews have come in from so many different countries and so many different cultures and so many different languages, and we have forged together and are forging together. It's an ongoing process into one people. It's an overwhelming miracle of Kibbutz Galyot. We'll speak about it Sunday when we introduce the question of Ashkenazim and Sfardim intermarrying. And this is a golden point where you can cite Als Juden. He writes it. And he says, we Polish Jews, look at the way they look down upon us. Look at the way they would never take a rabbi in modern times, a Polish Yid, an Ungarish Yid, a Russish Yid, if he wasn't a world-class, cultured individual. He's not a rabbi. We can't use him in Germany. And I have to tell you, the brilliant doctorate of Professor Mordechai Breuer, I'm not talking about, there were two first cousins, two Mordechai Breuers. You all know one was at the Gush and one was at Bar Ilan University. The one at the Gush, of course, Rabbi Mordechai Breuer, they died within a few months of each other. Very fascinating individuals. And Rabbi Mordechai Breuer at the Gush, he was a fascinating synthesis of a Hebron yeshiva boy and a critical biblical scholar. Very, very unique. Rabbi Mordechai Breuer, Professor Mordechai Breuer, with a real doctorate. Rabbi Mordechai Breuer had an honorary doctorate from Hebrew U. But Professor Mordechai Breuer had a real doctorate, and he did a fabulous doctorate, the Yuknasha Leda. I quoted it years ago when I spoke about German Orthodoxy. He deals with post-World War I German Orthodoxy. And it is so fascinating because you see post-World War I, Germans, their wives could wear shaitels, and yet they were total Germans, totally cultured, totally at home, and you lose. And this is our problem in America. You're coming and pleading with people, come to Israel, save your soul spiritually. I sound like Guys and Dolls, if you recall the Salvation Army scene, right? Remember Guys and Dolls, Sarah Brown? If they would only take out their few escape parts in there with the dancing, if they would take that out, it's a movie every teenage Jewish kid should see. And you should know, the chubby guy there, nicely, his father was a chazan. Don't think these guys came out of nowhere. He had a good voice, but he was a Broadway showman, and his father was a chazan. Coming back, you're talking to people. You know how Tova Lichtenstein put it? Very ingeniously. When my parents became citizens of the United States, they gave Kiddush. When Aaron and I went in Aliyah, we gave Kiddush. And that is so insightful. And Reb Aaron, in a talk he gave at the Gush, when he stepped down as Rosh Yeshiva, and he speaks about his wife, and he thanks her for all the years she's inspired him, and he said, it was harder for her to go in Aliyah than for me, and yet she led me. And Reb Aaron explains, because she was more American. She grew up in Boston. She was a New Englander. She was a Brahmin, if you understand that term. Tova taught me that word on this level. She was a Brahmin. Reb Aaron was a greenhorn. He came to America, a kid, running away from the Nazis. They ran from France to Chicago. His parents spoke Hebrew to him. His native language is Hebrew. You don't know that. Reb Aaron's native language was Hebrew. His native street language was French. But Reb Aaron was a greenhorn in America. For him, it was easier, and it was Tova who led the way. And you follow me, Michael? You got to give all the credit to Rav Teichtel that he could understand this, that he could write this. It's overwhelming. And he speaks, he cries, we were the Ausjuden. That's the way they referred to us. And he said, only in Israel will we be able to have this feeling again of Am Yisrael. And I need not tell you, Baruch Hashem, we have it. I'm always amazed. When you walk the streets, you hear the people speaking so many different languages. Just pay attention. You walk the streets for Chavya, Katamon, at the center of town, you hear English, you hear Russian, you hear French, a lot of French today. You hear a little bit Yiddish yet. Every language you can imagine. And you see the kids all speaking Hebrew. We don't realize what a miracle happened here, right before our eyes. And we're part of it. It's overwhelming. And you gotta be smart enough to join. You got to be smart enough to join. God have mercy on the values of Jews we left behind. Okay? Got to be smart enough to join. God have mercy. Even from Jews, people are still shaking. A guy, imagine, kills his wife in Staten Island, and the first one, I now found out, the first one he calls the rabbi, Rabbi Lefield. I just killed my wife. What should I do? I mean, just think what I'm talking about. My Talmud, with all the money problems, commits suicide. We all know. He left a letter for his rabbi. Dear rabbi, I don't know what letter. Dear rabbi, the day before, as I will commit suicide tomorrow morning, I want you to know that I will miss you. I considered you a good rabbi. Please, there are certain matters to take care of. And he listed a few things out for the rabbi to handle. It's beyond words. Borrow Park. I mean, I don't want to be a wise guy, but I raised the hakira. Everyone who hears my hakira, did I tell it to you in class? I don't want to waste time. Everyone who hears my hakira says, boy, that's an ingenious thought. Baropak, could you imagine hiring nice, fine, good-looking Jews with button pairs and black clothes and black hats? They wouldn't count Rakefin into the minion, believe me. And to give false testimony? To put a man away for 20 years and it turns out that all the witnesses were false? The New York Times had a field day. So I cleared, and this broke 3 days after the guy killed his wife. I got to give the American judicial system credit. They freed the man immediately. From what I know, again, you can go back to the New York Times. You can pick it up as the New York Times. Right before Pesach. The story, as I gather, is very simple. There was this Jew that had a big travel agency. He's very wealthy. People were jealous of him. They tried to buy him out. He refused to sell. So they hatched a plot to get the guy into jail. Then the family would sell out. So they brought testimony that he molested some young girls. And they put him away. And the judge, like Rubashkin, right? They threw the book at him. Because today, molesting young girls, you know, you got to throw the book at the person. So they put him away for 20 years. It turned out. And the guy said, I'm innocent. It's not true. It's false testimony. It turned out these witnesses, five witnesses, were paid tens of thousands of dollars. Shana, fine yidden, beautiful, good look, like you. Imagine you walk into court. Lotana Berecha et Sheka. Anyway, they released the guy from jail. There's going to be a mistrial or a new trial or nothing. And five people are under arrest. The investigation continues. The New York Times had a field day. So Rakefet, with his sense of humor, cleared a hakira. Which is worse, killing your wife or what happened in Borough Park? What's pshat? To kill your wife, the guy got angry. It's a homicide, it's not a murder. All right, you got angry for a minute, you killed your wife. Big deal in today's day and age, if you know what goes on in Israel. God have mercy on us. You know, the Russians get angry, they're not Jewish. 9 out of 10 times when you hear those stories. But to plan false testimony? That's a plot where you work for weeks, where you got to take money, where you have to pay off. Where are we at? What happened to the Ten Commandments? But that's the challenge. Are we a total Jew or are we a ritual-oriented, non-Jewish pagan? That's the challenge. And that's what the Ema Banav Smecha is saying. And I have to tell you, the Rav, if only I could bring them together. When you look at Rakefet, what he quotes from the Rav on Berlin, and when you look at the Ema Banav Smecha in that particular paragraph, they coalesce into one. So I have to tell you, give them all the credit in the world. A munkacha who came back. Okay.
Ritually oriented.
Forget it.
Ask the same question differently. A ritually oriented adjectival Jew. Adjective.
Good. You
rather than total
Jew. Very good. What you said is better than what I said. Take my word for it. But what can I tell you? The Gemara says, "Kol hadaba chutz laretz ein lo eloka." Okay, I can't do better than a Gemara. Kilo aveda vaydazara. But believe me, if you say this publicly in Borough Park, yeah, right, they'll listen, they'll laugh, they'll walk away. What can we do? We can't make panasa here, you know, and our wives won't go in aliyah, and our mother-in-law is in the hospital. They'll give you 101 terutzim. But in the meantime, look at the way they're raising their children, and take a look how Satma reproduces itself, and we could use Satma right here and now. Could you imagine another 100,000 Jews coming in Aliyah? Wow. But all right, we'll get there. We'll get there. I'm angry at one person. There was a girl in Michlala who was Meir Kahana's bunker. When they left Jamit, 1982, I think it was, and Rabbi Koopman threw her out. An American girl, fine girls. I went to Rabbi Koopman. I told him, I wasn't the only one, but we told him off. We said, you have no right to interfere with a girl's mind. She did this during vacation. It was Pesach time. And if she's a Kahananik, that's her business. But to throw her out, so he let her come back in and paroled her in my custody. What does that mean in my custody? She had to report to me 3 times a week, and I had to see that she's, you know, a very bright girl. I don't want to mention her name, famous name. So where does she wind up after all that we did? She lives in Eastern Parkway, right there, 770. Her husband is a Chabadnik, never raised 10 children, can I inherit? I believe the Messianic Chabadnik him. Boy, does that burn me up. I went to battle for her, and look where she winds up. But I hope that some of the kids will wake up and come back in dignity. Okay, anyway, be it as it may, Yitzchak, that's one point. There's another one.
It's a magnificent, beautiful, emotional book.
Right.
It was written in 1943.
Right.
It's like a Jew trapped, or any one,
right.
On the second floor.
Right.
A burning building.
Right.
Writing
right.
About the glory of smoke alarms and fire escape ladders.
Okay, the same though, but give him
burning to death.
So, but give him credit that he wrote this volume, published it, and had he only survived. By the way, you know what happened
to? Let's send the copy of this to every Jew in Lakewood.
Right.
Let's see how they respond.
So that's what that guy did as a reason.
So let's see how they respond. So
Rakefet said, if one person will respond, now he will have accomplished.
Didn't your neighbor, the colleague, what's his name, downstairs, after his son was shot by accident?
Rothenberg.
Yes.
He published and pleaded.
Did it help any?
Absolutely not. So Baruch Hashem, that's what I told Michael. We have to be. But look, why don't you look at David Pardo? Here is a young man from the West Coast, marries a girl from the West Coast. He's here in Aliyah. Why don't you look at Sammy Zimmerman sitting in back, and then his wife, Dina? Take a look. Where are they from? Dina's from the Upper East Side. You can't get, you can, right or wrong?
West
Side, where she went to Ramaz. Right or wrong? You can't get any more American than that. It's more than Maimonides. Joel Lookstein was angry if a kid wore a yarmulke outside of the school. He said, a yarmulke, a kippah, that's in the school. Outside you wear a hat. You understand? Rabbi Joseph H. Lookstein. American dignity. Gentlemen, this is the heart of our problem. How do we handle it? Rakefet has learned the hard way. By yelling, shouting, screaming, or giving a shiur like I just gave, they'll laugh me out of the room. You have to be an example, and it rubs off. It rubs off. Baruch Hashem. David.
Can I ask you, admitting that the miracle of Kibbutz Goliath,
yeah,
the problem of, I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, Altsyudin, the notion that some of the Jews are outsiders, you know, down upon. Do you think that still exists in Israel?
No, of course it exists. Every Russian Jew will tell you, in Russia I was a Jew, here I'm a Russian. Every American will tell you, in America I was a Jew, here I'm viewed as an American. Every Moroccan will tell you, Baruch Hashem, look where we are today, that the Eidot HaMizrach are 90% integrated. They are a political force. They have produced chiefs of staff, right or wrong. Look where the kippah is today. Who would ever believe that the head of the Mossad would be wearing a kippah? I mean, just think. Who would ever believe that the Skan Ramatkal would be wearing a kippah? Who would ever believe that they would change Yom HaZikaron on Yom HaTzmut so they shouldn't be Chilul Shabbos? So you see, there's a process at work. It's a tahalich. And it's great. It cannot be forced. It has to be gradual. But as one who has lived here 42 years, the miracles I have seen, I thank the Almighty that I was worthy of seeing what I have seen with my eyes. Who would dream that a kid like myself from the Bronx, I write about in my new book, that Goyim beat the hell out of us Sunday morning when we were walking to yeshiva, and they were two and we were five. We never dreamt of lifting a finger to fight back. Come into my office and I'll show you a picture of yours truly with a grandson, a paratrooper. All my grandsons are far pink ravi. I don't want to say another word. Finished. Gentlemen, let's go a step further. He's not finished. Michael, I agree with you. I agree with you. But yelling and shouting, but admire the man who said, I'm a munkancher, and I had the guts to leave. By the way, you know what happened with his family? No. The children, I think all his children were saved. He didn't get out. He died in 44. Almost all his children were saved. As far as I know, they're all Chabatnikim in Israel, all over the world on Shlichut, believe it or not, including in Germany. You can contact Chabad. It's a poster picture. They have all his children or grandchildren. Maybe one branch of the family, one son, taught in Central Yeshiva Heist, taught for YU in Brooklyn. He came in Aliyah. So part of the family is here. Part of it is all over the world. But they're no longer Munkacher or Satma. They're all Chabadnikim, with all that implies. Believe me, you'll see tomorrow, more and more Haredim will celebrate Yom HaTzmut. It's a gradual process. We are getting there. And I am celebrating Yom HaTzmut with Talmidim of mine who came in Aliyah. So Baruch Hashem.
How do you explain that Chabad does not...
Does not what?
They don't say a prayer from the Bina. The
sixth Rebbe was more opposed to Agudat Yisrael and Mizrahi, considered both of them apikorsim. That's the truth. Forget about what anyone tells you. The seventh Rebbe was the greatest Zionist in the world without being a formal Zionist. That's Chabad. It's unique. It's different. The Rebbe was the Rebbe. Believe me, the biggest mistake they made was not appointing an eighth Rebbe. And Kachazer, as Rakefet says, why you did better than Chabad. The Rav and the Rebbe died within a year of each other. Look what happened in Chabad. All right, why you? The worst that happened was that, and I benefited personally from this. The worst that happened was you have Rebbeim who portray the Rav, certain Rebbeim, I don't want to mention names, they put their face on the blackboard. That's the Rav. Everything they think, I've read, I've heard them. They're not described, they're describing themselves. Pulled the Rav right, pulled the Rav left. How did I benefit? When my two volumes on the Rav first came out, there wasn't great acclamation. You know, this one wrote nice, this one wrote this, that, this one criticized. 11 years later, I was Zeicher, a Baron Lichtenstein. Don't want to say an extra word. But Rakefet says it's very simple. When all the other works came out on the Rav, somehow people looked at my two volumes. Gee, this is honest. This man portrays the real Rav. Baruch Hashem. Anyway, we've done better. YU has survived. It's not the same. The Rav can't be replaced. The Rav can't be equaled. But at least no one has declared that the Rav hasn't died, that the Rav is Mashiach, that the Rav is God, etc., etc. So we've done better than Chabad. Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, come back here. Beginning, and this is the end. Beginning on the very end, page Shas, he quotes, and this is Reb Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. Reb Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, you all know, was the Rav of the Eid HaRedit in Yerushalayim, and everyone considered him a tremendous extremist. And he quotes a chesped that was given in Hungary when Reb Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld died. What happened? A Rav got up in Hungary from the Chatam Sofer's family and said, the greatest Ohev Yisrael has died. And everyone couldn't understand what he's talking about. And he said, if you knew Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld, he never let you speak Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, about the people. He constantly quoted the Pasuk, Re'ei V'tuv Yerushalayim. And he constantly called attention to the sins of the Meraglim, that these were Gedolei Yisrael, Nesi'ei Ha'edah, and they were Motzi Diba on Eretz Yisrael. And he quoted stories about Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnefeld that absolutely reflect the stories we know about Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook. That whenever someone criticized what's going on in Palestine, in Yerushalayim, he always had a retort, but look at the good. And that's the famous story with Rav Cook, and you all know the Gerer Rebbe. You know this, I've mentioned it. The Gerer Rebbeim are extremely wealthy. The Gerer Rebbe takes no kvitlach. If you've ever gone into the Gerer Rebbe, you know that depending on the season of the year, there's either oranges, crates of oranges, or crates of apples, and he gives a chassid. Whoever comes in to see him gets something from the Rebbe, Zalamachna, Bracha, Shiraim from the Rebbe. So the Gerer never take money. So you ask a question, what do you mean they never take money? Where's their wealth from? Yeah, all right, they raise money for the yeshiva system. Once every 2 years, I think it is, they hire a hotel in Italy, and they make a Gerer Shabbos with the Rebbe. You only can get a reservation in the hotel, and this I know is a fact. I know it from some people, Sammy, on the Upper East Side. You follow? If you put in $100,000 in addition to the cost of the hotel, $100,000 for the chinuch system. But on a personal level, the Rebbeim don't take a penny. Why? They're independent. They're multimillionaires. Why they're multimillionaires? Because the third Gerer Rebbe, the Rebbeim, Rav Avram Mordechai, the son of the Sfat Emet, visited Israel 6 or 7 times between World War I to World War II. Each time he came, he bought real estate. I don't have to tell you, if you bought real estate in North Tel Aviv for $100 an acre in 1930, what that was worth by 1950, 1960. My father-in-law and his father visited Israel 35. What, that had a terrible tragedy in the family. My wife's aunt died in Lake Placid. She was on the, ice skating, and there was a hole in the ice, and she drowned. So to forget that tzarat, they visited Israel. So at that time, they were offered lots in North Tel Aviv, $100 a lot, whatever, and it was too much money. Imagine where I would be today had my father-in-law or grandfather-in-law bought a few lots in 35. So the Gerer are independent. So the Gerer Rebbe became very close to Rav Cook. And the story is told, they were walking and talking right at the entrance to the old city, Shai Yafo. And suddenly, they see a Jew being Mechal of Shabbos. So the Gerer Rebbe says, criticizes it. And Rav Cook says to him, why do you criticize? Why don't you look at all the Jews who are Shomer Shabbos? And that's exactly the attitude they attribute to Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnefeld. And he says, and if Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnefeld, who was the head of the so-called anti-Zionist, if Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnefeld, who after all, everyone quotes him as being the antagonist to Rav Cook, if he could have such a fabulous attitude, Alacha kama v'kama, we have to have that attitude. Re'ei v'tuv Yerushalayim, and the Baal Maspid is correct. Yerushalayim lost its greatest advocate, its greatest Ohev Yisrael. Let me add a postscript. Life is very fascinating. Here you have Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook, and everyone knows Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnefeld, so-called two opposites, although personally they respected and loved each other. By the way, Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnefeld, his biography is very fascinating, because he comes basically from a not-so-pious background. He may be a prototype of one of the early Balei Tshuva that we have. And here these two men were so different. Look around today, 100 years after they first met, approximately, and it's very hard to find any descendants of Rav Cook who are not Haredim. He personally left a very small family. There was a lot of tragedy in the family. People died young. His grandson was killed in Hebron. But he has many nephews and a good deal of the family. His own son, Reb Tzvi Yehuda Cook, who was married to my neighbor's sister, Reb Yeshua Hutner's sister, had no children. And yet, among the nephews, many semi-charedim as great rabbanim today, Rab Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, who was the antithesis of Mizrahi and religious Zionism, has hundreds and hundreds of direct descendants, a very high percentage of whom were kipatz rugat and served in the army. So the called Rakefed, he must have done something right. I happen to know many of his descendants, and I happen to have taught in Michlala, in the postgraduate division. I taught many of his descendants, including the wife of Chief Rabbi Metzger, who is a direct descendant of Reb Chaim Yosef Sonnenfeld. And the list is endless, and as I said, many of them were big kipatz rugat and have served with dignity in the IDF. So you never know what life has in store. You can take Reb Chaim Brisker as a fabulous example and take a look what came out of Reb Chaim Brisker, all the way to Brisk in Yerushalayim and Brisk in Alon Shvat. And wow, everything in between, Chicago, Boston, fascinating. But Dafab Mazel, that's what I say about Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. The world doesn't recognize how great his wife had to be, Rebbetzin Pesha. Five children raised under the most difficult of circumstances, running away from Kaslovich to Warsaw to save their lives, crossing the border with fear of bullets, impoverished, coming to America, greenhorns, and all five children remained totally committed to Torah Hashem Tamima. You don't see that in rabbinic families at that moment in time. You do not see it. It's just unbelievable. Did you ever think of that? You have to give tremendous credit to Reb Moshe and Rebbetzin Pesha. And I give the credit to Rebbetzin Pesha because I know very well that I played very little of a role in influencing my children. I was out of the house. I was busy. I was learning. I was writing. I was this. I was that. Kol hakavod to the Eshet Chayil. Gentlemen, I am a feminist with a capital F, but within the framework of Devar Hashem, Zu Halacha. Follow me, Gili, stand up for your wife, because the Shechina will be transmitted by her. You will only be an aide-de-camp, or a shalish, in modern Hebrew. Gentlemen, let me go a step further. Now, look what we've said. We've spoken about the Holocaust, and what am I, an idiot? I'm smarter than my Rebbe. I told you that off the cuff, the Rav said in private conversation, I even know to whom, anyone who tries to give reasons for the Holocaust is an idiot. The only reason is Hester Panim. So once again, I have to come back and tell you, Hester Panim, how can we start to understand? Am I any brighter than my Rebbe, any brighter than the Chazon Ish? And it's very important to teach this. I have to tell you, one of the big faults in Chinuch Torani is we teach children to take Kriyat Shema literally. You do good, you'll be rewarded. You'll do bad, you'll be punished. Fine. That is absolutely true. I say it twice a day at least. But you also have to teach children that at times a mortal cannot understand everything. And this is Sefer Yiyuv. And it's very important to a young boy or girl by the age of 15, 16 have to understand the Parsha of the Akedah and the Parsha of Yiyuv and have a realistic attitude. Torah is not a lollipop. It's not something, well, we're going to do good, we're going to have a sweet lollipop. And what am I referring to? I had the simplest example of all. I can tell you a story. L'davonenu, all my stories are true. The good ones are wonderful, but the bad ones are sad. There was a Beis Yaakov girl in Flatbush. And she's walking home from a kiddush on a Shabbos morning. This goes back to the 70s, I would believe. And her parents are with her. And they're walking on, if I'm not mistaken, it was crossing the street in Ocean Parkway, or maybe it was Coney Island Avenue, one of the big thoroughfares, if you know Flatbush. And a drunken Puerto Rican driver runs the car up the sidewalk and kills her mother. In other words, her mother, they weren't even crossing the street. They were on the sidewalk and killed her mother on Shabbos. That girl left religion, went through so much. She came back 15 years, 20 years later. But what a life she led. And no one ever taught her in Beis Yaakov that, in theory, v'chayim shemoa tishmur mitzvotai, but unfortunately, at times in life, there are concepts beyond our control. There's hezd upon him, there's sefer yiyuv. Sefer yiyuv is a powerful sefer, an overwhelming message. And that's important to speak about. But nevertheless, it's like the Rav taught us. Remember, I once, years ago, the Rav once gave a talk on Pashat Chukat. So the Rav said, these are Chukat, he quotes the Medrash, the Ne'umat Olam laugh at us, and then the Rav banged three times. Why did I bang three times? The Rav asked. It's on tape, it's a well-known tape. And the Rav said, because the Torah has to be accepted. Chukim are there to teach us we don't understand everything. This is a divine system. You have to accept it. No questions asked. This is Torah. You all know when you say, if there's a rabbinic well, there's a halachic well, you're a reformed Jew. That's not the Torah approach. Torah is Torah. We have a configuration which God gave Moshe Rabbeinu, and that configuration has kept us as Jews until today and will keep us ad biyat Mashiach, ad vad beklal, to quote the Gemara in Chum. Adbat Baklau. But the Rav said so beautifully, nevertheless, a human being remains a human being. So you're going to ask questions no matter what. You're going to try to understand. We can't just walk around like imbeciles, like robots. I have a grandson, finished Tesla. He's majoring in robots today. Why robots? I asked him, what are you? He's in third year. I mean, you should see what he's studying. I don't understand one syllable. So he told me that he's convinced the next war will be fought by robots, and we have to prepare the Israeli army. He wants to make his father contributed. His father's a Machon Lev graduate, so twice won the highest award in the Israeli army for innovations on Merkava 2 and Merkava 3 with night sight. So he wants to be in robots. Fine. We are not robots. So the Rav said, after we bang three times and we've accepted and we pause, we have a right to ask, what can we understand? How does it speak to us? What can we decipher? Why? How? We're only human beings. We're not robots. So I said to you, there are tremendous ideas out there about the Holocaust. One idea can be subsumed under the Satmar Rebbe, punishment, Rebbe Chanan Wasserman. I dealt with that in great detail. Then I switched gears. I said there's another idea out there. If you recall, I introduced it by quoting Professor Khartoum, the Italian scholar. And then, of course, I said the most classic example is Eim HaBanim Smecha. And Eim HaBanim Smecha certainly speaks to me more than the Satmar Rebbe a million times over. And why is it so important? And we alluded to it. Well, why? And here I want to give you a source. Not that I'm happy about this source, but you have to know it exists. And here I'm quoting someone that none of you know outside of Yitz Rubin. It's a generation gone by. It's Rabbi Leon Mosesson. You know who that is? It is Rabbi Heschel Schechter's uncle by marriage. He wrote a volume. It appeared in 1991. Very interesting title. Yitzhak, do you have the volume? Echoes of the Song of the Nightingale. Can anyone tell me what that means?
Yes.
That you can, I know. Anyone here? Yeah? What do you say? Exactly. Rabbi Nightingale. Well, let me explain to the class. Soloveitchik in Polish means a nightingale. Why did the family take the name Nightingale? Because they were Levium. And Levium, what is their task in the Beis HaMedrash? To sing. You follow? So, echoes of the nightingale, it's a play on the Soloveitchik relationship. He was very close to the Rav. He taught in Maimonides. Yitzchak knows him from Maimonides. If I'm not mistaken, he had a little shtela in the Boston area. And he was very close to the Rav. He was a Talmud Chacham, a tremendous Yirei Shemayim. Now, I'm going to cite from this volume, but you're going to find it very extreme. So I just want to give you one word of biographical background. I mean, I checked this out. Couldn't understand why he's so bitter, so extreme. And it turns out he has a daughter who, let's use the word, if you know Matan Hebrew, chitkaska. Have you heard that word? It's like when a Bnei Akivanik starts going and becoming Haredi. So they use the word, he chitkaska. It's not about Shiva, because the daughter came from a frum home. That daughter winds up in the Mea Shearim area, raising her children like fine, wonderful, young Jewish kids in Mea Shearim. I need not tell you that the parents suffered from that turn in her life. Now, here, beginning on page 92, he explains why someone shouldn't go in Aliyah. And you all know that the whole sugya in Ketuvah, Reb Moshe, the Avnei Nezer, is there a chi of Aliyah today? Is there a mitzvah ki yumid? Is there a mitzvah ki? I don't want to go into the lamdas now. But one thing you know, Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen in Tosfot, why didn't the Rishonim all go in Aliyah? If Aliyah is such a thief, such a mitzvah. So of course we can answer that it wasn't as bad as today. You didn't lose your identity in Franco-Germany and Russia, no matter where you lived. You were a Jew. You were part of the Jewish people. There were crusades, there was this, there was that. It kept you Jewish. Fine, good. But why not do something positive if you could? So of course, you all know in Tosfot the whole problem of the sakana, the derech, mitzvah tatluyot v'aretz. So Rabbi Moses said, and I met him a number of times. He was a very edle individual. I'm not criticizing him, but I certainly disagree with what I'm about to tell you. So he says, of course, Bizman Hazeh, the getting to Israel is no longer dangerous. We all fly on planes. It's totally safe. As far as mitzvah teluyot ba'aretz, we all know that in Israel you can be Mekayim, all the mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz. There's our chief rabbinate here, Trumat Maisrat, even Shviat, more and more, and you all are aware that there is no tremendous problem with being Mekayim the mitzvot. But he says, I'm paraphrasing him, but take my word, it's all there. I can't believe what I read. I had to check out who he is, what's happened in his life. He says, there is a sakana today. A sakana that you can't make a living or have a spiritual home like Yeshiva University. This is a sakana that's even worse of the sakana taderech. And he says, let me explain to you. What do I mean you can't make a living? Gentlemen, you're all aware when it comes to giving a poor man charity, you're supposed to give him charity in accordance with his lifestyle. If he slept on a nice bed, you have to give him a good bed, even if it's better than yours. If he was used to luxuries, you have to give him the luxuries. This is charity. Sufficient for his needs, which he lacks. Not only the basic universal needs, but the special needs have to be provided. Ah. How do we live in Israel?
He wants everybody to have
the standard of living doesn't compare to America. I just, a Talmud of mine, I met him by chance the other day, and we got into a discussion about Aliyah. All his children are here, and many of them are struggling. They don't have panasa. They said it's so much easier back in Canada, back in Toronto. And believe me, it's a struggle. I have people who eulogized me for years after I left America. Rabbi Rothkopf was a Rosh Yeshiva, and he was a rabbi building a prominent synagogue in a prominent area. He gave up a great deal to leave. Could be. I can tell you in the 70s through the early 80s, life was not easy here. Financially, I was an easy target. I worked for the government of Israel, Michlala, and the other paycheck was the Jewish agency. You couldn't cheat. You were visible. Everyone was black. Who had white money then? Talk about laundering money. The whole Israeli economy, I think 40-50% went underground. But a poor Melamed, I didn't have money for the fourth Shabbos of the month. I had two full jobs. I didn't eat pheasant under glass. Turned into a great bracha, I understand. Because the fourth Shabbos, I go to Machon Gold, be with the students. So the greatest Jew that I met in Israel, Professor Nechama Leibowitz, said, and she would walk over. She lived a few blocks away, Rehov HaTzvi. And Nechama would come. My daughters grew up sitting next to her. I have all her books, which she signed for my daughters with anger. She said, here they advertise, order Rakefet's book and he'll sign the book. Big deal, Rakefet signing, throw it out. What worth is good the signature? Well, come on. But Nechama, no. Your standard of living, the struggle. Wow. Back to America. No mitzvah. And then he goes even further. I can't believe my eyes. This is on page 95. Get hold of the volume. Check it out. And you'll see. I'm quoting him, paraphrasing him thought for thought. America, we have Yeshiva University. Broadness, spiritual greatness. You can be learned in Torah, filled with Yirat Shemayim, and be part of the big world. In Israel, there is no comparable institution. We have nothing to compare it with. You are choking spiritually. You must choose either or. And that is Sakonet Nefashot. For a Jew who was raised at the foot of the Rav, for a Jew who was raised with a YU Weltanschauung, how can he go on Aliyah? Wow. And then he goes on, I'll read you another paragraph. He finds here already he's a Meragel. Unfortunately, the image of Israel in the world today does not make it a magnetic force to attract Jewry for positive reasons. Whether it is the sale of Uzis that end up in the hands of crooked drug merchants, or sophisticated Israeli weaponry that is sold to China, or international scandals that Israelis seem to have a propensity to get involved in, it does not seem likely that Israel will draw Jews to its land for its international ethical stature and its maze of internal politics. And economic regulations will not invite prospective newcomers. Quote, end quote.
What is the reason?
Gentlemen, well, hold on, let me just go, let me just finish up. Gentlemen, we need Eim Habanim Smecha for things, volumes like this, and thoughts like this. This is mamish, the antithesis of Eim Habanim Smecha. And let me state it loud and clearly. Every word that Rabbi Moseson wrote may be correct. That is why we're here. He forgot an open Gemara. Megillah Daf Chafav, It's a number of times in the Midrash. Asidin batei kinesiyata batei medrashat shebabavel sheyekbu'u be'eretz Yisrael. The Goliyot are going to come back here. One day, all the institutions, all the shuls, all the yeshivot that we established in the Gola will be reborn, restructured, al admat HaKodesh. And married the Gemara. Fabulous Gemara. But you got to ask one question. What do you mean you're going to bring the buildings? What are you talking about? How are you going to put a building together? How are you going to take apart Kehillat Jeshurun on 85th on Lexington? How are you going to take apart some of the beautiful Sephardic temples on Ocean Parkway? No, it doesn't mean physically. It means the ideas we developed in the Gola. We come back to Israel and we gradually build the country with the greatest ideas, synthesizing, interlocking, complementing each other of all the beauty, of all the greatness that we built in Chutz La'aretz. And I have to tell you, you talk about Yeshiva University today, there are many options al admat HaKodesh. Mechon Lev is right next door. Bar Ilan has a midrasha for women and a kolel for men. There are endless Haredi colleges today. In addition, there is Touro. There is Landa College. In the Chesed Yeshiva, there are many Chesed Yeshiva with so many variegated programs that there is so much choice, and it only grows better and richer as time moves on. You talk about the state, the leadership, the politics. I just read this morning that there's a new development in our world, a blessed, wonderful development. What do we have today? Before the Six-Day War, there was one Chesed Yeshiva, or one and a half, Hadarom and KBY. After the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War, we have today tens and tens and tens and tens of different Chesed Yeshiva with different types of programs. We have endless ulpanot for women. We have michlalot for women. So many different types of program, including art and dance and what have you. You have k'dam tzva'i, the best in the country, where it's yeshiva training and getting a young man ready for the army. He delays his service by a year and a half, but then he goes in to officer's training and he's ready. They are now opening for the first time. Where do we lack kippot? The police force. Anyone who sees the police force, kippot are few and far between. And they're now opening a training program. It's sort of like a Chesda program, like a Kedam Tzvayi. It's Kedam Mishtarti for the police force. So I must say, with all that I believe in Hester Panim, we owe a great debt of thanks to the thinking of someone like the Im HaBanim Smecha. And it gives us the ability to look the naysayers in the eye and to show them how they're absolutely wrong. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I hope that as more Torah-observant Jews take on crucial positions in the state, there'll be less scandals and less politics, less dishonesty, and much more inspiration. It has to come about. I don't say every Shomer Shabbos Jew is a totally fine, ethical, upright individual. I'm not that stupid. We just now have a bitter taste in our mouths from the first, I shouldn't say the first, but certainly among the two or three total Shomer Shabbos presidents who were presidents of the State of Israel. You might want to include Ben Zvi in that list. You might want to include Shazar. You certainly have to include as a Shomer Shabbos Katzav, Navon to a certain degree, and we all know what we suffer. And so I'm not foolish enough to say that every Shomer Shabbos Jew is mamish a musanik, a tzaddik, but I would like to believe the more shmirat mitzvah there is, the more dedication there is, the higher the ethical, moral behavior. So I reiterate, what did we do today? It was an important class. We finished out the Eima Banim Smecha. I think I've done justice to it. We dealt with Michael's problem. I showed you an addendum to Michael's problem, that here, these are copies. Pass them back to Michael and Yitz. Who knows what will be. This is the story with the pebbles, if anyone wants. It's a Meredith story. This is David Applebaum's picture, if anyone wants a picture of David Applebaum. It's a shame I don't have a picture of Cyril Birnbaum. It brings it to life. But this is David. And this picture was taken in my house. That's when David and my Talmidah Deborah were newlyweds. It breaks the heart. Ay, God, what the price we have paid. Gentlemen, so we finished that day. Mabanim Smecha. We dealt with the echo of the nightingale, and we need a lot of strength to go further. Are there any questions? Michael, you wanted to say something?
Just very quickly, and I mean this.
Yeah.
You know, I hope I don't insult you in any way. Did the Rav consciously push Aliyah?
No, you're not insulting me. The Rav, I'll tell you this. So it's the same thing with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Rav and the Rebbe were Americans, and they were concerned with building Torah in America. They both had exactly the same approach. If you could contribute to building Torah in America, you belong there. When
you're giving the same answer as Rebbeim and Lakewood?
To a smaller degree, but could be. But on the other hand, when I didn't ask the Rev permission, I said, Rebbe, I wrote the Rev a letter that I'm going in Aliyah and I want to meet you to take a Birchat Preda. So he gave me a time to come to his apartment to meet him and take a Birchat Preda. The first words the Rev said to me, how will you make a living? Now that teaches you, same question. He was very, Rav David Lifshitz said to me, Ataloma Fached? And I answered, Rav David, listen to this. Listen to what I answered him. I answered him, Ani Somech al Tzvach and al Yisrael val Haribayni Shalaylam. And he said to me, Haseda Nachon, we spoke about Yaakov and Esav preparing for the meeting. I want to tell you, after living in Israel 42 years, I was wrong. I should have said, Ani Somech al Haribayni Shalaylam v'al Tzvach and al Yisrael. After being in the army for 15 years and being connected and seeing about reading, have you read the bestseller Habor? A book just came out on Hapaz, on that letter by Don Margoliet. It's worth reading that book. It sickens you, but after reading that book, you got to celebrate your Matzmud 100 times more that the Ribbono Shel Olam watches over us. Gentlemen, the siren will blow. We have to get ready. I want to thank you very much for coming to class. It was a hard day in which to teach, but I see that I was right with all that happened today and Torah Shraga going to the cemetery. I told them to go, not to come to class. With David Miller cutting it in my time and giving a shiur, and with all that would happen, we had, Baruch Hashem, a nice crowd. So I want to thank you very much. I want to wish you a meaningful Yom HaZikaron. It's a hard day today. And we go, it's a big question how we can shift gears. This question has been 42 years, I'm living here in 42 years, it's still discussed. But I can only say it's like Tainit Esther and Purim. So tonight we go to joy. I'll be davening in a minyan where they'll probably say hallel at night, hallel by day. So it doesn't make any sense to say hallel by night, but was smolcha b'nei Yisrael lo neviyim heim, b'nei neviyim heim. I'll have to go along with it, particularly if my grandson is the chazan. I certainly will have no choice until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya, the Yom Atchagatzma'ut Sameach. Thank you very, very much. Okay, we did it. You give it back to me when you download.